The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of Salem Media of Hawaii.
Welcome to Generations Radio, where the focus is on our seniors and their families. We are here each Saturday afternoon from 5 until 6 p.m., bringing you resourceful information with our radio team of professionals in the field of aging. Stay with us for the next 1 hour as we explore different ways to make life more exciting and meaningful for our extraordinary seniors, right here on AM 690 The Answer. And now, here is our host and the publisher of Generations Magazine, Percy Ihara.
Okay, welcome back to Generations Radio. I am Percy Ihara, your host every weekend throughout the year. And we play on Sundays from 3 to 4. So don't forget, also on our Generations 808 website, we have all our past radio shows and TV shows. So hang out with me for the next hour. We have a great topic, something that I actually heard about. It was maybe 22 years ago. I met a doctor some years ago and didn't realize how big sleep disorder is. And so we have Dr. Ronson Sato from Kuakini Pulmonary Sleep Center. I didn't even know he had a sleep center over there. So welcome to the show, Dr. Sato.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
So, yeah, I love unique names. Obviously, my name and yours is kind of related a little bit from a recent concert you had there with Bruno Mars, right?
Right, right. Because
who was the guy that he co-wrote a song with? One of this co-writer was a Ronson guy, right?
Oh, actually, Mark Ronson, right?
Mark Ronson, I think, was the co-writer.
With Uptown Funk, right?
Yeah,
right.
Great song.
So my dad actually was the one who really named me. His name is Ron. Ron, for short for Ronald.
Uh-huh.
And he was waiting for me. So he named me Ron's son. That's how I got my name.
That's two older sisters. Did you have like four sisters or five sisters?
Two older sisters.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. Yeah. Well, good.
Yeah. And then in terms of my daughter, so my wife is pregnant. We're expecting in about 4 weeks. I've been trying to get her to buy into the name Rhonda for Ron's daughter, but she's kiboshing that.
That's an old name.
About that.
Well, you can call what rhymes with Ronson if it's a daughter, right? We'll figure that out by the end of the show. But anyway, so Dr. Sato, I didn't even know you had a sleep center at Kuakini. Is it that big of a problem in Hawaii?
It's a really big problem everywhere. Sleep apnea is on the rise. It's very common. But especially in Asian population, so, especially for Hawaii, it's going to be pretty prevalent, but still very largely underdiagnosed. So it's a big problem, but still a lot of people out there that don't realize that they have this kind of sleep disorder.
So when you say Asian population, why is that? Can I ask? And that's one of the questions I wanted to ask early on, because a lot of our listeners are Asian. We have obviously all ages. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we have a lot of the children of parents that have problems or health issues, mm-hmm. and they listen to the show. And they go back to our website, listen to the show again. But is there anything specific related to Asians?
Yes. It's because sleep apnea is really focused around anatomy. That's the root of the problem, is that the space at the back of the throat is crowded. And when you sleep, the airway collapses. And if that space is crowded, there's more increased risk. There's an increased risk of collapse. So for Asians, just based on the facial features, the angle of the jaw, and the spacing, which is different from Caucasians, different from African American, we are predisposed to more collapse. And studies showed that at various ages, sex, and weight, so again, this is appropriate weight, slender people, Asians have a higher risk of sleep apnea. So you don't need to be obese, but you can still have this problem.
So you say you have a smaller or
more narrow
back of the throat, narrow the throat?
Right, and Asian faces are usually a little flatter, right? Our cheekbones are not as prominent. Jawline is a little different. So when we sleep, and based on the way the anatomy kind of closes up, that puts Asians at a little bit more risk, just a lot less space in the back of the throat.
I never heard of that before.
Yeah.
And so has it always been like that? I mean, I'm realizing more and more people have it.
Right.
So I'm only 58, so over the years I've learned more about aging.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, I heard about 20-something years ago, and in the last few years I've been hearing friends of mine. Mm-hmm. I have a friend of mine just got, apparatus on your
CPAP?
Yeah, apparatus. Yeah. I have a cousin that has that, mm-hmm. an old college roommate that has that now.
Right.
But it's always been like that?
Right. So, the question is, it probably has been, but it's just that we didn't know what that was. We used to think that snoring was something that was normal. We snore when we get really sleepy, when you're really tired, as we get older. But now we know that snoring is not normal. And sleep apnea was probably around for a long, long time. And we just never knew what it was. And we didn't know that snoring was a symptom of something more concerning. And now we do. And so we're diagnosing it, reaching out to more people and finding it. And you mentioned children is a big base of your listeners. And the interesting thing is that, you know, it's all based on anatomy. And so we share a lot of our facial features with people in our families, our parents, siblings, children. So sleep apnea is also not something commonly just happening to one individual in the family. Usually it's
multi-generational.
Yes, yes. Because we share facial features with our parents, siblings, children.
I guess so.
And so children can have it. Kids can have sleep apnea. And a lot of times parents don't think about sleep apnea as a pediatric, a child's kind of sleep disorder, but similar kind of symptoms, presentations, and kids are predisposed to sleep apnea as well as adults.
What's the youngest client has sleep apnea?
Well, for us, you know, Kuakini is a little bit more focused on adults, a little bit more of the geriatric population, but I see patients, whoever kind of gets referred to me in my clinic as well. Probably the youngest right now is, you know, 12, 13 years of age.
Wow.
And I think, you know, I think a lot of it is just recognition and that maybe parents don't think about, you know, asking about sleep apnea or talking about sleep disorders or sleep symptoms. And that's true for physicians also, right, that we're not necessarily asking about sleep patterns for kids because you just don't think a child is going to have a sleep problem. That's when your sleep is supposed to be the best, most refreshing sleep.
Yeah, you just got to make a run all day.
12 hours.
Exercising.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So there's still a lot of recognition, education out there, and it's a slow shift in, you know, the community and what we're trying to recognize and that there's things out there that we should be asking about. But, you know, it's getting better, and it's just a matter of awareness and trying to ask the right questions.
Sure. Well, that's one of the reasons why we do this. That's one of the reasons why we added in radio and all, you know, TV on our Oceanic Cable Channel 16, the Generations TV show. I just found early on, 16, 17 years ago, when I started working with seniors, that there's a lot of great information, a lot of great work like you're doing here, but we got to get the information out there. We need to provide.
Definitely.
So hopefully catch it early as possible. We want to be more of a proactive resource versus a reactive resource. So you're Elon Inge Boy. You went to school here locally at Johnny's Burns of School of Medicine.
Yep.
Now, where was I going with that? Just draw a blank. So,
local, born and bred.
Let me ask you this. So, sleep. How did that? What is apnea? Is that a? What's the term? And what is sleep apnea?
Yeah. So the entire name of it is obstructive sleep apnea, and what that is, it's a sleep disorder characterized by recurrent upper airway collapse that results in less airflow, less oxygen when a person sleeps, and that ends up disrupting their sleep. So it's sleep apnea is while they're sleeping, they have an apnea, which is a prolonged period of reduced airflow.
Coming from the back of your
back
throat.
Of the throat, back of the airway, right. So it's the soft tissue at the back of the throat. And when we sleep, our body relaxes, the muscles are relaxed, including the muscles of the upper airway. Mm-hmm. And in people who have small crowded spaces, the space of the back of the throat is crowded. As you sleep, those muscles relax, the airway starts to collapse, the tongue falls back into the throat, especially when you sleep on your back, and that collapse starts to block the airway. And snoring is the sound of air, turbulent air, trying to get through this collapsing soft tissue.
Well, not because you have a stuck nose or something?
Right. So it can, right? So anything causing more noise is more turbulent flow. There's less airway, but that's still not normal. Right. So there's definitely other reasons why people can snore, but that means that there's less airflow, right? There's a smaller airway. So the question is that snoring coming from the nose or is it the back of the throat that's collapsing? Because when that happens, we're talking about significant drops of airflow, oxygen.
Is that just, that's just a two ways to tell it's an issue? You're breathing from your nose or lack of blockage or something? From the throat?
Yeah. I mean, snoring is a symptom, and it's hard to distinguish whether it's from the nose or further downstream at the back of the throat. And that's why we need to do sleep studies. A sleep study is what we do.
What about just tape somebody?
Yeah. I mean, you can definitely...
have a relative that breathes a little hard.
Yeah, right. And I'm sure we all have those relatives, the rip-roaring, snoring, shaking the walls.
Yeah.
but it still doesn't diagnose a person with sleep apnea or having nasal symptoms or nasal obstruction. So in the end, you still want to assess, is that snoring significant? Is that airway collapse significant enough where it's dropping your oxygen now? Is it disrupting sleep? Is it affecting your heart? And that's why we need to do a sleep study. Because snoring, again, there are people who snore that don't have sleep apnea, but it's probably a lot less than the people who do. And so you want to get evaluated because the ramifications of untreated sleep apnea is a lot worse than just someone who snores.
I know what question I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of doctors on here, and I always ask, what made you want to get involved with sleep disorder?
Yeah, well, it was something that was interesting to me during training. During my training in pulmonary critical care, so lungs and critical care medicine, sleep was also integrated because it had a lot to do, especially sleep apnea, has a lot to do with breathing and the mechanics, the physiology of breathing, oxygen effects, and how it affects your sleep. But of course, the more personal side is both my parents have sleep apnea. They both have CPAPs and, growing
separate
up.
Separate
rooms? same room, CPAP set up right next to each other, tubes flowing from the headboard down to the CPAP mask. But, as a kid, you kind of laugh about it and think, wow, that's kind of strange. And what's going on there? This apparatus that they're wearing kind of looks like, Maverick and Top Gun, where they're going to bed with
exactly
these,
what it looks like.
These masks. But it's something that I also, wanted to find out more about. And, I realized that it's very common, especially in my population. Like we're talking about local population, Hawaii's population, Asians, and then it's a growing problem. And it's just more that it never was really recognized. Like you asked before, it probably was there. We just didn't know that it existed. We didn't have a name for this sleep disorder, but it was there.
But it's always during your sleep. Does it affect anything else? Like, can athletes still perform at a high level even though they have sleep apnea? So does it only is the issue only at night when you sleep?
So the sleep apnea, by definition, would only affect you when you're sleeping because while you're awake, muscles are activated. You're awake. Everything's alert, and the airway's open. No problems with your breathing, right? If you do, it's a different kind of problem, but. Usually, your breathing is going to be normal when you're awake, and it's really something where when you sleep, the muscles are relaxing and collapsing, and that airway is small enough where now you're causing obstruction. You mentioned athletes, whether it's athletes, physician, a radio personality, or whomever it is, a lot of times how much sleep apnea or how much sleep affects their performance, their function, varies. And so a lot of times people will come in because they're sleepy, they're tired, they're falling asleep at the wheel, falling asleep during movies, they're fighting to stay awake when they're driving, right? And it affects their performance, their function, alertness, concentration. And we have other people who have very severe sleep apnea. We test them, they have severe sleep apnea, but they function pretty well. The only reason they came in to see me is because their bed partner was saying, my husband or my wife is snoring and they stop breathing when they sleep and they're moving around a lot, but the person doesn't realize it because they're sleeping.
Right.
And so sleep apnea affects people differently in terms of how they feel and to what degree. Some people function well and others really get incapacitated or really affects them. But the idea is that, we don't know if they might be mild, but they might get worse down the road. So we really want to try to prevent them from getting to that point where now it's really affecting their function.
But you can't, let's say you grow up with a 12-year-old, you think you have an issue, but you're okay with sleeping as long. I guess if you're the only person in the room.
Right.
It doesn't affect anybody else. Let's say you get married now. Does it get to be a point where it gets worse?
Yes, it can. So sleep apnea tends to get worse with age in general. It can get worse with weight gain because with more soft tissue around the airway, it can cause more collapse. So that amount of collapse, the severity of collapse can worsen. And for women, again, this used to be a sleep disorder that was thought to be largely just for men.
Oh, really?
But women have sleep apnea as well. And it's just sometimes they present a little differently. They might not present with the rip-roaring snoring and the gasping, but they can have it too. It can disrupt their sleep just the same as for men. And for women, times, especially menopause, post-menopause, they have an increased risk of sleep apnea. So
oh, really?
At that later age, in the 50s, 60s, we see an increase in the amount of women who develop sleep apnea. And it's just because of the hormonal changes, the body changes, weight changes.
It's a fascinating topic today about sleep disorder and sleep apnea with Dr. Ransin Sato from Kuakini Hospital. So is that why you have a sleep center? That's how you really diagnose it? Or does somebody say, you know, my wife or my husband's in really getting worse with his snoring, I can't sleep, can we check him out? Is that what you do?
Yes. Yeah, that's what the sleep center is for. It's for evaluating people's sleep quality, not just for sleep apnea. Of course, that's probably the most common sleep disorder here and in general, but also looking for other kind of sleep disorders, leg movement disorders, unusual behavior, you know, people who report sleepwalking, acting out their dreams, things like that. So it's really
So you just don't only handle sleep apnea,
sleep problems.
A lot of disorders, sleep disorder that does not relate to sleep apnea then.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
What percentage of your, of the people that you see have apnea versus not, just having sleep issues?
Probably 95% of my patients are coming in for sleep apnea. you know, occasionally there'll be people with restless legs or kind of unusual behavior. Their bed partner says they're acting out their dreams, moving around, getting up in bed and giving a speech.
Sleep talking?
And, you know, sleepwalking, sleep talking.
That's not very common, is it?
Not very common in adults, right? A little bit more in children, but that's normal.
Why is
because
that?
they grow out of that.
Why is that? Nightmares, I mean?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's nightmares. And it's a little different in terms of the presentation because, say, nightmares, kids remember that they were dreaming about something, the monster chasing them, versus sleepwalking, they don't remember it. They don't realize that they're walking out of their bed downstairs or into the kitchen and waking up in a different place. So it's not, you don't have that nightmare, that visual image with them like you do with a nightmare. So there's little nuances between the different types of sleep disorders. But in general, that's something that kids will grow out of, and you don't necessarily have to treat them. You just want to make sure that the environment is safe, that they don't hurt themselves.
Got it. So let's say I have a relative that doesn't really snore really loudly, but they do, I would say, not on a regular basis, but, yeah, maybe 3 to 4 days a week. So we will call you up and say, can we do it? Do you do a test before this? So you actually sleep overnight, right?
Right. So we have the sleep studies where a person stays overnight and we get a lot more information from that type of sleep study. But now, a lot more common now where we can do home studies. And that's because some people want to be at home. They want to be in a familiar environment where whatever they wear.
Bed and you got your own pillow like that.
Yeah. And sometimes it affects their sleep, ability to sleep.
Might change your results too, right?
Right. Sure. Sure. So we can do the home study. So they're in their own familiar environment. We get less information from those studies because it is a portable study, so we can't evaluate
as much. Put a camera
much.
On them?
Right. We don't have a camera. We can't even
tell. Is that what you do? You put a camera on at your place?
Yes. So everybody has a camera. There's a microphone that's recording audio, and we're looking at sleep pattern, airflow, oxygen, heart rate.
Plugging all the little things on your body.
Right, right. Exactly. But we get a lot more information, and that's the study that's looking for any type of sleep disorder. Mm. The home study is meant to look for sleep apnea specifically. So we don't treat during that test. It's not looking for other kind of sleep disorders, but it's a way to do it at home, and it's a lot more convenient for people and sometimes much more comfortable.
Is it pretty much always the loud snoring that triggers, that tips it off that it could be sleep apnea? Or do people have sleep apnea that doesn't make noise?
There are people who don't make noise. Yeah, so it's a great question. And I think that's kind of misleading for people. So in general, if you're sleepy, you're tired, you don't feel like you have as much energy or refreshment as you think you should feel. The question is there something going on with your sleep? And it's always a question of appropriate sleep quantity or quality. And so it could be a sign of any kind of sleep disorder, really. But snoring is usually the most noticeable symptom for people.
Well, it's so interesting, so fascinating, because I have some relatives that I hear stories when we're at family dinners. So is it like only one night required, or like a couple nights that require?
Usually one night. And again, it's trying to get an assessment on one night as a sample versus every night when a person is sleeping. So it's helpful to get history, but you know, it's difficult because a person is sleeping and the bed partner is sleeping. And sometimes you don't know what's normal and what's you know, abnormal. So the other things besides snoring, of course, daytime sleepiness, morning headaches, waking up frequently to use the bathroom during the night can be a symptom of sleep apnea. A lot of people will think it's from the bladder or they drank too much water, but that can be a sign of sleep apnea.
But are the symptoms different for males versus females?
They're mostly similar, but the big thing I think for men is erectile dysfunction, I think, is one that my patients, the male patients, will want to ask about or hear about and sometimes a little embarrassed. But that's a big difference. And the big thing is, you know, sleep deprivation, it can cause dips in testosterone. Sleep,
people have erectile dysfunction
as a symptom of sleep apnea.
As a symptom of sleep apnea.
Yeah, yeah. And this is because of the dips in testosterone, plus with sleep apnea, oxygen levels drop. And testosterone and oxygen are both important in healthy erections. And so the good news is, though, with treatment of sleep apnea or any kind of sleep disorder, sleep deprivation, you know, testosterone levels can improve and get back to normal levels, and so can
sleep. So is testosterone one of the common ways to solve the sleep apnea issue?
Well, testosterone is an end product. The low testosterone levels is an end product of a sleep disorder. So really what you want to do is treat the underlying problem, right? You can, it's like when you have pain, you can take Tylenol to help with your pain, but really you want to get to the bottom of why you have that pain and treat that to prevent the symptom, prevent that pain. So you want to treat that sleep disorder, improve your testosterone levels. You don't need to replace testosterone, right? Your body does it naturally.
So that's so interesting because I think I recommend a couple of people to that. I know I've heard stories in my family at dinner, like we hear, they have a hard time sleeping. And I know a friend of ours, he only sleeps about 3 hours. He gets up every 3 hours. And I don't know if it's stress-related because he doesn't work. So it couldn't be stress-related. So I couldn't figure out why would it be stress-related. But it's been like that for a while. Yeah. And I don't think he has sleep. I don't think he has. Is that the CPAP the most common treatment for that?
It's the best treatment right now in terms of effectiveness. Now, best, it all depends on what you're comfortable with and what works best for you, right, which is most effective. But it's been shown to be the most effective.
And otherwise, do you take medication or other?
Unfortunately, no medication.
Oh, really?
Available to treat sleep apnea because it's a problem of the anatomy, and we got to just open up that airway to improve airflow. So CPAP is airflow meant to keep that airway open while you sleep. There's oral appliances that help to create more space at the back of the throat. Right. Surgery, of course, to open up more space. But most people don't want to have surgery to, you know, something surgical to open up the airway.
But does that, like, fix the problem most of the time?
Most of the time, no. So small-type surgeries like fixing a deviated septum, like you mentioned, snoring from the nose, taking out the tonsils if those are large, they can help mildly. They have mild impact. A jaw surgery to lengthen and widen the jaw had been shown to be the most beneficial, most impactful.
No,
but that's pretty dramatic.
That.
Right. It's trying to create more space.
Increase your jawline.
Yeah. It's like this room. If you take out some of the chairs, the desk, you're taking out small pieces of space to create more room. But really, you want to widen the walls, the rigid boundaries of this wall to make it bigger or of the room. And that's what the jaw surgery is trying to do, is create more space from the jaw. Open up the back of the airway.
So is it that serious a problem where somebody can die while in sleep from sleep apnea?
You know, it's indirectly, it's possible because of the stress on your heart. And this is happening multiple times, many times an hour, every hour you're sleeping, 365 nights a year for years. And sleep is supposed to be that time where your body's refreshing itself, restoring itself, repairing itself. But if you're having disrupted sleep and you're stressing your body from low oxygen, fighting to breathe every night at that time where you're supposed to repair yourself, then when do you? When do you get to rest, relax, you know, refresh yourself?
So that cause a heart attack possibly?
Heart attack, stroke. Uncontrolled high blood pressure, irregular heart rhythms. Those are all long-term complications, risks of untreated sleep apnea.
Now, people, that we got to take a short break here very shortly, but a real last question. So is it mostly people that are older, you said? Like, are they retired or they're still working?
You know, it's across the board. It could be, like we said, young children can have it, adults, young adults. I think with more awareness now, I'm getting a much wider range of patients. So I've got teenagers, 20s, 30s, college students that just are sleepy, always sleepy, snoring. Wow. A lot worse, and of course, the older population. But they have more health problems now, high blood pressure, they've had a stroke, they've had a heart attack. That's what we're trying to prevent. We're trying to prevent that from happening or from it recurring. And
sure,
so
sure.
Anybody, well, really.
We're here with Dr. Ronson Sato from Kuakini, and it's an interesting topic. We're going to take a short break and come back, talk more about how to prevent it, maybe some ways, maybe talk about nasal strips.
Okay, sure.
About. And some common things that people do besides the CPAP mask. So we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
When you feel like Vegas, there's just one place to stay. Grab a drink at the Holo Holo Bar. There's just one place to play. We got a fresh hot look, a new sports book. We got those local meals, just like Auntie Cook's. Aloha spoken here.
Check out the Cow's new renovated look and see why the Cow is Hawaii's favorite place in Vegas to stay and play.
If you're new to Medicare, we can help you work your way through all the questions, the details, and the headaches. Generations TV has gathered experts in the field to help you find the answers. This is Navigating Medicare.
When it comes to Medicare supplement plans, or what we call Medigap plans, okay, these are plans that fill in the 20% that Medicare doesn't cover. And there's plans from Plan A all the way up to Plan N.
When you're signing up for these plans, there are certain times when you have guaranteed issue. The Medicare Supplement Open Enrollment Period.
Hi, I'm Ed Motosui, and I'm with Financial Benefits Insurance. We're a full-blown insurance company that deals with seniors. We help seniors understand Medicare so they can come to us, and we'll gladly help them understand all the Medicare health options.
Helping you work your way through the confusion, Navigating Medicare. Brought to you today by Financial Benefits Insurance, serving the entire state of Hawaii from the corner of Pi'ikoi and Kapi'olani in Honolulu.
Got Vegas on your mind? Get Vacations Hawaii on the line. Vacations Hawaii offers weekly 4 and 5 night Honolulu to Vegas packages, which include 3 meals daily from $6.99. Stay at Hawaii's favorite casinos, California, Fremont, Main Street Station, and Orleans Hotel. Vacations Hawaii will get you there in comfort on deluxe wide-body 767 planes with complimentary in-flight hot meal service. Vacations Hawaii's frequent flyer program gives you future travel discounts and credits. So if you're ready to win big, call Vacations Hawaii at 591-4777 or visit PointVacationsHawaii.com.
Hi, I'm Margaret Wong with the Copeland Insurance Group. Let us be your Medicare resource throughout the year. We have agents throughout the islands to be of assistance to you. So if you have Medicare questions, we have the answers. Call us at 808-591-4877. Again, 808-591-4877. Thank you. We look forward to hearing from you.
Today, more than ever, we local people are living longer than any other state in the union, with more seniors, baby boomers, and caregivers. Generations Radio promotes the importance to be proactive as we all age. The radio team will focus on issues facing our seniors and their families, finding resources to navigate healthy aging along with financial, legal, and caregiving information. So join Percy E. Howard from 5 until 6 each Saturday, right here on AM 690, The Answer.
5914777
We don't play.
Complete 4 and 5 night packages from $6.99. Vacations Hawaii, your favorite connection to Vegas.
Focusing on the issues facing our seniors and their families today. Here's our Generations Radio host, Percy Ihara.
Okay, welcome back to Generations Radio. Thanks for joining us every Saturday from 5 to 6 and Sunday from 3 to 4. And don't forget, we're slowly growing our website where you're going to get a lot of resources there. And check out our past radio shows and also our TV shows that our producer here, Ron Darby, does. He does a great job. And so we're starting season two, by the way. So, Dr. Sato, we got to get you on. But, yeah, it's great resources. We highlight a lot of special seniors out there. Medicare is a big issue going on. And we got some great events coming up next year. We're going to be having our December-January issue featuring Carol Kai from the Greater Lowell Run. And I didn't even know this. They have a senior run the week before the Greater Lowell Run. So we're going to encourage. We have a lot of people from the Parks and Recs helping promote it. January 18th and 19th at Windward Mall, we're doing a big senior fair over there. And we have a bunch of presentations out there on aging. And also with Carol Kai, we'll get people to sign up for both races, the senior run and the Greater Lowell Run. Have you ever done that, by the way? Greater Lowell Run, Dr. Sato?
I think I've done it once. I've run the Honolulu Marathon a couple of times.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, when I was a fourth-year medical student. And then 10 years later, I think I'm going to do it every 10 years is my goal.
Oh, good luck with that.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
Anyway, we're talking about sleep apnea. And it's such a fascinating topic. And I found out about it 20 years ago. I didn't realize. Like, I work with seniors every day, my mortgage business. And, you know, when I first started visiting clients in the home, they'll show me the house and say, oh, here's my husband's room, and my room's right next door. Mm-hmm. I really didn't even think about that. Obviously, when you get older, some things don't function so well. But then I had a cousin of mine that had I slept over his house one day about a few years ago. He goes, Percy, you okay sleeping in the living room? I said, why? I think you should go sleep in a room. I said, why? Because he slept on his couch in the living room. Uh-huh. And I didn't know he had sleep apnea. He goes, well, I make a lot of noise. So when I'll sleep in the living room with you, no problem. I saw him put this contraption on his head. He didn't tell me he had sleep apnea. He said, I'm going to sleep loud. Contraption, like, what is that? That's the first time I ever saw that. You're right.
Yeah.
It's called a CPAP.
Right. It's an acronym for Continuous Positive Airway Pressure. It's just blowing airflow to keep the airway open while you sleep.
But it makes noise because it's like the battery or the engine or something blowing.
It's a pump, an air pump. So it is blowing air. There's a motor. But when it's working well and fitting well, it's really should be pretty quiet. The idea is that you want that peace so it doesn't disrupt your sleep or your bed partner's sleep.
Yeah, I mean, you can still sleep in the same room, right? It's not that loud.
Oh, yeah. No, it should be pretty quiet. It's kind of like the hum of the air conditioning in here.
Right.
It should be quiet, kind of calming, steady. It shouldn't be, you know, fluctuating and getting noisy.
So is this one day you wake up and it gets really bad, or is just slowly as you age, the issue gets worse and worse and worse?
Yeah, it's usually something that's progressive. And when we're younger, again, it's something that you sleep apnea you have after you stop growing, after the bones stop growing and your airway is set. But with time, we tend to get older, things get softer on the body, we gain weight, and so we may increase the collapse of the airway. And just time of disrupted sleep kind of accumulates, and people start having problems now with alertness and, you know, energy, function, concentration, or develop a health problem, high blood pressure. Hopefully not, but heart attack, stroke, irregular heart rhythms. And that's just, you know, after accumulation of poor quality sleep and stress on the heart after years and years of sleeping like that.
Does a person that has the apnea sleep less per night on average?
Not so much less, actually. It's just more disrupted. And they're usually trying to get more sleep because the quality's poor. So even if it's not overnight sleep, because that's pretty routine for, you know, people usually try to sleep the same time and wake up the same time, but they might be dozing off during the day at lunch breaks, or they're just taking naps while they're watching television in the afternoon when they come back from work, or in the evening before bedtime. Their body is sleep deprived. And so they're falling asleep when, you know, at any time.
It's interesting. So what about risks unrelated to sleep apnea? What are those some of the issues?
You mean risks that can increase the risk of having sleep apnea?
Untreated sleep apnea.
Untreated sleep apnea. So the big things are the cardiovascular risks, right? So uncontrolled high blood pressure, strokes, heart attacks.
Uncontrolled blood pressure.
Right.
So if you have high blood pressure, you're not controlling it, so you're not taking medication.
Well, the risk is that even with medication, right, it's difficult to control because you're not really treating the problem, which is sleep apnea. So sleep apnea is a risk for uncontrolled hypertension, high blood pressure, because you're still having stress.
It can cause high blood pressure then.
Right. It's a slippery slope to say this can cause something, right? So it's hard to prove sleep apnea causes high blood pressure. Sleep apnea causes a heart attack. There's an association. So people who have sleep apnea have higher rates of high blood pressure, heart attacks and strokes. Now, whether there's definitely a link, but does it cause it or does it worsen it? There's definitely that connection. But there could be other factors going into why someone has high blood pressure, heart attack, stroke.
Interesting. It's so fascinating. I'm learning so much. That's one thing I love doing this show. We've probably done, including my old shows back in the day, probably over 200 different topics. And I've always wanted to have this. We got to get you to write an article for the magazine. But anyway, so you were talking about ED before, erectile dysfunction.
Yep.
So by eliminating sleep apnea, will that reverse ED? Or can it?
Yes, it can. So as a symptom of sleep apnea, when you treat it, you improve your sleep quality, you improve your sleep time. It can improve testosterone levels and it can improve ED by better quality sleep, right? It's one of those things where you want to evaluate a person for any problem that's contributing to the ED, but sleep is definitely one of those things. So if there's any question and you're talking about having some of these symptoms we talked about, it's definitely worthwhile to get evaluated, see if your sleep is something that could be improved on, and that could help your testosterone levels, sleep quality, and ED just by treating that sleep problem.
But do you guys handle the testosterone? Because I know I've seen a bunch of commercials and ads about that now, how, there's a lot of stuff. It's, I don't know if it's a new thing, but it's pretty interesting. I'm pretty active. I have a lot of high energy, so I don't really worry about it too much. But I can just imagine if I'm a slug at home and couch potato when I want to run a marathon.
Right.
And maybe I should check my testosterone levels. It drops, 4% and 6% a year after age 40 or something like that?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I don't handle testosterone because it's a little different. It's now we're talking about hormone therapy.
Right.
But if there's a sleep disorder that's contributing to that low testosterone level, if we treat the sleep problem, hopefully the testosterone levels normalize. And they can. And so
naturally? Just by getting more sleep?
Yep. By getting adequate sleep.
Adequate
sleep and good sleep quality. Right. And so we're looking for causes. And sometimes, like blood pressure, sometimes that's abnormal and there's no real underlying problem that you can fix. It's just high. Cholesterol can just be high no matter how well you monitor your diet, no matter how healthy it is, no matter how much you exercise. It's just what we call idiopathic. It's there, it happens, and you need to treat it by correcting with medications. Same thing with testosterone. I mean, you're looking for underlying problems that you can correct rather than just using that Band-Aid and replacing with testosterone. Because if you treat the underlying problem, that helps itself. The testosterone normalizes on its own, and you don't need to replace your testosterone. It's your body does it for you now that you've corrected the sleep problem. But sometimes it's still going to be low, even though you're getting good quality sleep, and you may need that replacement. That's the importance of getting evaluated to really find out what's the underlying problem here.
So I know there's different talks about the ideal amount of hours of sleep. I thought when you're younger, you need more sleep. When you get older, you really don't need the 8 to 9 hours of sleep. But I just saw an article just the other day that, you need to have 7 or 8 hours of sleep as you get older.
Yeah. It's it varies from person to person, and it's hard to, put one number on what a person needs. A lot of studies, surveys that looked at how much sleep a person needs to function optimally, it varied. And most of the time, I'll ask my patients and say, how much sleep time do you feel you need to feel your best? And, in general, the national average was 7 hours, as for adults, 7 hours. And then the other ends of the range, like people who said they needed 6 hours or 5 hours were less people, and people who said they needed 8 hours or 9 hours to function optimally was less. But really, I'll just have that person try to hit that number that they think they're best at. And it's, again, quantity is important, and then quality, right? That's where we're looking for any kind of sleep disorder that's affecting quality, because if their quality is poor, it doesn't matter how much they sleep because that sleep is poor.
It's interesting. So preventing sleep apnea, can you actually prevent it if you already have a smaller esophagus and throat,
yeah, anatomy. It's a good question. Unfortunately, as an adult, there's not much you can do because you've stopped growing. The airway is set, bones are set, and so your airway is what it is. And so the best treatment, again, is CPAP, airflow, to keep that airway open. We try to prevent it and identify it in children and adolescents because their airway may look narrow, may look crowded. They've got parents who have sleep apnea, and so they're kind of going down that route of probably having a narrow airway also. Mm. But you can try to help kids before they stop growing by, you know, taking out tonsils is a big thing, optimizing nasal allergies, congestion, so that they can open up that nasal passage, mm-hmm. breathe easily, and that helps normal palate growth and normal expansion. Yeah. And sometimes it's narrow already, and so we can do orthodontic palatal expanders that try to open up that airway just to help the airway expand optimally, so that once they stop growing, you've got as much space as possible. And hopefully, they're not going to need CPAP when they become right. adults.
I know back in the day, everybody got the tonsils out. I don't know about nowadays.
Yeah, now it's really something that you can do if it's a problem. So if they're really large, they're contributing to disrupted sleep, or you're getting a lot of infections, tonsillitis, sore throats, then it's something that could be, you know, removed. But it's not one of those things where you just do it automatically, because most of the time tonsils are small and right. they're not a problem.
Right.
And you could have it in, you know.
So what about nasal strips? You see a lot of commercials about that. Does that help? What is it? Is it a strip, what, magnet or something inside?
What's it's an adhesive that's trying to stretch open the nasal passage.
But the only top part of the nasal passage.
Right. So I don't know if you've ever seen somebody who's taking a deep breath in through their nose. And their nostrils kind of collapse inward, right? So when someone is trying to take deeper breaths like that, that negative pulling pressure to get air in collapses the nasal passage. So instead of getting more air, you're blocking the airway and you're getting less. Exactly. So those nasal strips are just trying to keep it open, kind of splint it open. So even when they're trying to suck in air, getting more air in, then it stays open. That's what it's trying to do. But that's something people
work?
Do. It's mild. It's not really impactful, and it wouldn't really help with sleep apnea because the collapse, the blockage is much further downstream. It's the back of the throat. So if someone is working hard to breathe because their tongue is collapsing into their throat, opening up their nasal passage isn't going to help that blockage, right? So you see a lot of athletes using nasal strips
because
they're
say that.
Sucking air, working hard, running fast, and it might help to open up that nasal passage, but that's on normal breathing.
Have you ever tried that? Have you tried on a marathon? Since you ran.
Yeah, I don't know if that was going to be enough to help my time or my endurance. So
look kind of weird.
I probably need more like oxygen or something else or a cab ride.
I've seen a lot of, I mean, I don't know what, 15, 20 years ago, you started seeing these athletes wear it over their nose. Like, what is that?
Yeah, but I mean, if the collapse, that nasal passage collapse is significant enough, it could help, right? If you're somebody whose nasal passage, you notice the nose kind of collapses in, then it could be something more helpful. But if it doesn't, then it's really not going to do much, right? You're always trying to look for the treatments that's going to be best for the right person.
You know, with Hawaii passing medical marijuana now and many more states and besides recreational, is it one way to treat sleep disorder, let alone sleep apnea?
You know,
is it coming? Is it here?
Unfortunately, it's not a treatment of sleep apnea. It has been shown to help with falling asleep, staying asleep.
The sleep disorder.
Or just in general. Just
right,
sleep.
Right.
But not as a treatment of a sleep disorder, right?
It was still.
It's sedating, it's relaxing. And so, just like alcohol, people fall asleep sooner. People claim they sleep longer. There's less
hungover. Is that why they make so much noise when they snore so loud?
When they drink.
That night after that.
Exactly. So it's a great observation. When you drink, it's a muscle relaxant. So it actually causes more collapse of that soft tissue in the back of the throat. So a lot of my patients will tell me they only snore when they drink, or that's when they snore really loudly.
Right.
But that's true because there's more collapse. But that's actually worsening their airway, their airflow, and their oxygen. Another thing with alcohol is it lasts about 4 hours and it's out of your system. So sleep gets a lot more disrupted the second part of the night or after 4 hours. So I have a lot of people who tell me, patients, that they fall asleep faster, right? A lot of times they'll take a glass of wine or two glasses, fall asleep quickly, but then they're waking up after 4 or 5 hours in the middle of the night and their sleep is still disrupted. Well, it's because alcohol does that. It wears off, plus it disrupts sleep. There was some preliminary results from for marijuana to treat sleep apnea. And I think there was a lot of people who were excited about that because initially there was some results that suggested that it helps sleep apnea. And it was going to be a great treatment, but they kind of took some steps back and said, well, we got to do a little more research. And so it's definitely not something that's recommended for treating sleep apnea. But it's in the works. So they're trying to see.
Oh, they're still researching it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you're trying to think of the physiology of how it would help, airway collapse, because it relaxes people. And that's
you don't
the
problem want that.
Is the airway, right? The airway is narrow and crowded, and when there's muscle collapse, it blocks the airway. So it's still being researched. I'm sure there's a lot of interest in that.
Is the lungs pushing the air out? Could it push more air out, possibly?
With that marijuana use, it's hard to make that connection. The airway collapse is really in the upper airway when it comes to sleep apnea, not affecting the lungs, right? It's people with sleep apnea don't necessarily have problems with their lungs. It's just a physical blockage of the soft tissue at the back of the throat, the tongue, the soft tissue, the tonsils, and that's what's blocking airway air to get into the lungs, and then the lungs could work perfectly fine. It's just that there's this blockage, and you're just trying to keep it open.
Because we see this, the use of medical marijuana for glaucoma and a few other issues, back
pain
issues.
Syndromes, right?
Oh, yeah, and we actually have a toss on the idea of doing a cover story on that next year sometime. I don't know much about it, but I know some people in Maui that led the push for that, and they've done some great research on that. So we'll see down the road.
I'm sure a lot of people would be interested in participating in that study. I know people who really swear by, marijuana helping them to sleep better.
Oh, yeah. We just talked to a friend of mine last week. She cared for both her parents. Her dad has passed away last year, but she said her mom had severe pain. So they were looking at that, but the law hadn't passed yet.
Right.
And she didn't want to go regular marijuana.
There's definitely a benefit of marijuana in helping things.
But marijuana, the product itself, is different than medical marijuana?
No, not necessarily.
No, same thing.
People use it recreationally.
But it's more,
as well.
More controlled growth of growing of it and care of the product itself. And
is it
organic?
I'm not as familiar with medical marijuana, the differences with recreational marijuana, but I think it's just more of a controlled setting. And I'm not clear on what those.
Well, I know it's
are.
Growing. But you said about for women after menopause, it's possible they're more prone to
higher incidence of sleep apnea. And just because of the hormonal changes, the weight deposition, the back of the throat, the airway, and weight gain in general. Again, it's not guaranteed that that's going to happen, but that is a higher risk period of a woman's life where they're more inclined to develop sleep apnea, because of those changes.
Is it something that that your general practitioner, let's say when you get older, do they consult the women patients about the issue? Possibly, is it part of the procedure?
I think it's going to be very dependent on that primary care physician or a general practitioner. So hopefully, physicians in general. Primary care physicians, other specialists, cardiologists, pediatrics, renal doctors, those are the kidney doctors, and even dentists are becoming more aware of sleep apnea. So they're looking for it, trying to identify it. And dentists, I think, they have an open look into the airway and can identify when somebody's airway is really crowded, really small. And that's
But they actually ask my dentist. I don't know about that.
I think a lot of the newer dentists, ones that are just up to date, they are asking about
really?
It. I've gotten Referrals from patients, from their dentist, because they're looking in their airway and saying, your airway is crowded. How's your sleep? Do you snore? You're grinding your teeth. And that can also be a symptom of sleep apnea. And of course, with more questions, they say, hey, maybe you should go get your sleep checked out.
But the reason why I asked that is that when I had shoulder surgery from playing sports, and the last one I had was when I was 55. So they were prepping me for surgery. Mm-hmm. And the nurse comes in, talks to me, getting me hooked up, and my blood, intravenous blood, everything like that. She goes, what kind of medication are you taking? I said, medication? I take vitamin C, glucosamine. I take that xanthosin, anti-inflammatory product. I mean, some turmeric, but no. What kind of medication are you taking? Mm-hmm. I said, I'm taking anything in medication. I said, can I ask why you asked that? He goes, well, you're 55, and most people at 55 taking something.
Yeah, right.
I said, really?
Yeah.
And it's kind of true. So we're having dinner with our friend the next night, and he's a chef, and so I was surprised he was on high cholesterol and blood pressure, and he's like 52. I guess because of the stress job and the eating all the time, but is that true?
Yeah, I think you're one of the fortunate ones that have good genes and taking care of yourself. I think 55 without any medication.
Really?
It's, something to be proud of. Yeah.
Well, I'm a little overweight, but I mean, I can still, I paddled in a canoe race last weekend, 6 miles, sprinting 6 miles. But but it's amazing. So the reason why I asked that is that, so I had shingles last year, 57,
mm-hmm.
and I knew nothing about it. I know what it is. My dad had it at 75, I think it was, 70. But nobody ever told me about worry about shingles, and then I found later on that when you do research, they don't talk to you until you're 50, 60 years old.
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm.
60. But when I got shingles, I was on laying down for like 8, 9, 10 days, and then I started talking to people after I got it. Majority of people I talked to were under 60. I know as early as 35 and 40.
Yeah.
So why don't they talk about it earlier?
Yeah, it's just not that common. Yeah.
I don't know. Earlier. I must have talked to 20 people, and I will tell you 15 people that had it were all under 50.
Mm.
So I know insurance doesn't cover until you're 60, mm-hmm. but that's something. So I'm always trying to look at preventative ways and being proactive.
Sure.
But so I'm assuming insurance covers all your services and the tests and everything.
Yeah, they do. It's really just in the right person. I mean, if the physician takes the time to ask the questions and they've got the suspicion of a sleep disorder, ordering a sleep study, it's covered. It's covered by insurance.
Oh, great. Yeah. So, Dr. Sato, thank you very much. Is there a number they can call your sleep center?
Yes. The number for the Kuakini Sleep Center is 547-9119. That number again is 547-9119. I also have a clinic office that I see patients at Queens Medical Center, POB 2, Physician's Office Building 2. That number is 691-8725.
So you work at the Kuakini Sleep Center and you have your own office?
At Queens, Physician's Office Building. And I work at both hospitals. I'm the director at the Kuakini Sleep Center, but also work at the Queens Sleep Center and see patients at both hospitals.
Is there a website they can go to?
I think if you look at the Queens Medical Center and Kuakini,
they should find it.
There'll be a directory.
I Google everything. Come here, son, Google it.
Yeah, Google it. Then you'll get the direct, lowdown, how many stars and what the number and what the bio is. You'll probably see pictures of me back in high school or something. I'll find anything in there.
Well, I appreciate your time. Fascinating stuff. Like I said, we'll have to get you to write an article for the magazine.
Sounds good.
And we'll hopefully get you a little snippet here on a Generations TV show. So thanks, everybody. I appreciate your time. We're here every Saturday, 5 to 6, Sunday from 3 to 4. Here on AM 690, The Answer. So I appreciate your time, everybody. Holiday season now. Watch out. Talk to your parents. Give them a call if you don't see them. But everybody have a great weekend now. Aloha and live well.